Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 464.
Why am I doing that stupid voice, Katie?
I don't know.
Why can't I just say, welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 464? I feel like as I always start the podcast with the same, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, Matt's made fun of it before. So I was just trying to have fun with it. I was just trying to mix it up a little bit. I was trying to mix it up for the listeners. I was trying to mix it up for my own brain. Katie, I was trying to mix it up for you, because you've heard so many of these. I think you've heard more Nerdist Podcasts than anyone else. Like, because sometimes you've had to listen to them a couple times to make sure that everything was all leveled and good and excellent for the listener.
I have to listen to them quite a few times.
God damn it. One of these days, maybe you should be a guest in the podcast. And we should dig around a little bit. Like, what's KT Money up to? Where's she from? What's her deal? What are her aspirations?
Okay. Are you asking me right now?
Does she want a family? Does she hate families? Does she does she like? What's her favorite Slurpee flavor? Is she
white
a beach,
cherry?
Is she a beach person? Or,
beach person.
Okay, I didn't
doesn't
say
even
the
matter
or,
what the second one is.
The orgasm planet.
Beach person.
Wow, okay, all right, good. I didn't even have to think about that one. At Midnight's back on the air. We just completed our first week. Thank you so much if you watched. The show it's my dream job, so I'm very, very, very excited to be back. We'll be back for a while, so please watch. It's Monday through Thursday after Colbert on Comedy Central at midnight. Our sponsor for this podcast, Katie, I'm very excited about. I don't believe they've sponsored a podcast before, but mm-hmm. I love this company, which is Spec. They make cases. They make like phone cases, mobile device cases, and they were one of our first sponsors for Course of the Force. They made these really cool.
Yeah, those were great.
Course of the Force. They sort of look like the clone
the
cases, the Stormtrooper cases, and it I've met a lot of the Spec people. I've hung out with them at like CESs and stuff, and just like super nerdy dudes, just good people. So the candy shell is probably the case that you know from Spec, and they kind of have this "Long live the machines" mentality, which advocates for humans to protect, not fear, the machines. Listen, if the machines are going to overtake us anyway, we might as well just be cool with them so that they're not like, hey, I remember when you were a dick to me when I was just, when I was a non-sentient device. So I guess long live the machines. And by the way, Spec, if you go to specproducts.com, they'll give you, can get cases for pretty much anything. It's a cool company and they make great, great, great cases. So go over to Spec today and wrap that puppy, and by wrap I mean put a case, and by puppy I mean on your device before you put it in someone.
What? Can I not? Keep it safe.
Keep it safe.
Keep it safe.
And keep it on the beach for Katie Levine. Katie, the beach. You're a beach person. I like the beach. I like to look at the water. I don't like getting sand everywhere.
I surf, so.
Oh, yeah. That explains everything. Yep. You can't surf in a forest.
No. I do like hiking, though, too. I like the forest, too. I just like nature. Anything that has to do with nature.
Have you ever been to Costa Rica?
No, I want to.
What are you waiting for? It's fucking rainforest, ocean.
I know. I need to go.
You could like swing through the canopies and then just like jump onto a surfboard and just paddle your way out.
That sounds like heaven.
I think the west coast of Costa Rica is the one you want. When I went there, it was the west coast.
They're surfing on both, but yeah, the west coast, I think, has better surfing. Because I know people have done surf trips there.
Miss you. I'm going back home to the west coast, Costa Rica. This episode of the podcast is Nick Kroll, who is a dear friend of ours. This is a three-peat. This is the third time Nick was on. The Kroll Show starts Tuesday, January 14th, and it is on Comedy Central for 11 weeks from there, I believe, at 10:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. So, Nick, I adore. I've done so many comedy shows with that guy and hung out with him a lot, and he's just such a sweetheart. A dude can say that about another dude, right? He's a sweetheart.
Yeah,
I just want to hug him every time I see him. And I'm one of the funniest people I know, so I greatly enjoyed chatting with Nick Kroll here on the Nerds Podcast, number 464. So I got to bookend it with crazy voices.
I like it. It fits.
You like it better than the beach?
No.
No. Sometimes you're a real dick, Katie.
I know.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello, Nick Kroll.
No, that was too official of a start.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Well, so let's just have a natural chat, and then at some point you'll introduce me.
What do you want to talk about?
Tiny Waters, mainly.
Tiny
Hold
waters,
me closer, tiny waters.
Wow.
Yeah, you and
go
I
out on the road.
Yes, out on the road away from other people. Just out into the middle of the road where other people can't hear.
Here's one thing that I would talk about up top.
Okay, please.
I think I probably came in around the same time last year to talk to you guys,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking. I was saying that I thought that Justin Bieber would have a meltdown within like a pretty short amount of time, and like a week later he peed in a mop bucket.
So are you Bieber psychic?
Yeah, I think I'm a little Bieber psychic.
Well, yeah, and then after that is when he did the Anne Frank thing, right?
Yeah.
And then also this past year, he
Brazilian whorehouse
got carried up the Great Wall of China,
yes. Threw up on stage,
yeah.
Got a bottle thrown at him. That's not him, but he brought that.
Yeah, he punched a paparazzi, or you know, so
it must have been cute.
I have to say, I still think the meltdown has not happened yet. I think these are just
like tremors.
Well, didn't he quit? Didn't he say he retired?
No, really?
He said he retired. He said he was going to retire from music. But I mean, he's not going
to
retire
to focus on arm tattoos.
To focus on Usher.
Yeah. To focus on his real love, macrame.
His manager, Scooter Braun, is engaged.
Isn't that one of Hitler's?
Sounds like that was one his of Hitler's trusty helpers. Sidekick.
In a manner of speaking,
Scooter,
yes.
Braun.
Yeah. Yeah.
What should we do about these problems?
Yeah.
Scooter Braun. I am concocting the perfect Aryan child.
He is. He is beautiful.
He will gestate for a period of 52 years, yeah.
The beanie on his hat was a swastika.
Is that what it was?
The little propeller, it was just in the shape of a swastika.
Well, I'm glad we all now have blown the lid off this.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, have we started? I'm sorry. Usually I'm not the one who says that. Other people.
Have we started yet?
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, that's great. Can we swear on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say whatever.
Great.
You're a three-peater to the Nerdist podcast. You were on the first year of the podcast, mm-hmm. then you were on last year, mm-hmm. and now you've come back. And so it's nice to I imagine that the podcast appearances have really helped elevate your career to places that you never had dreamed possible from being on a podcast.
You know, that is literally why I'm here.
Oh, by the way, in all seriousness, though, I thought you were really great on the James Franco roast.
Oh, thank you.
Which I haven't watched a roast in really ever and been like, oh, man, that was great. I mean, I know like the... I remember the old Dean Martin roasts I thought were great, and then I watch them again. I was like, oh, these are not that great.
Oh, interesting.
Everyone's drunk.
Yeah, everyone's drunk, and it's really just super racist, and it's not really.
Yeah.
And even some of the, you know, more recent ones always felt kind of awkward and like, oh, I think those people really got stung. But this one actually was great. It was really fun and funny, and I thought you guys, I thought you did a great job.
Thank you. You know, the, by the way, we're talking to Nick Kroll.
I'm sorry, who?
That'll all be sussed out in the intro.
Yeah, and also I'm realizing it's like, it always happens in podcasts where it's like, oh, we even introduced you. It's Nick Kroll. And then you're like, oh, like the people reading the like description of a podcast aren't looking to see the other name that is.
I tag intros on all of them. And that's where there's like a little bit of a sponsorship read. And I go, this podcast was Nick Kroll. It's the third time he's been on.
Okay. You know, and do you do like an Alec Baldwin, like, here's the thing where he's like, Nick Kroll came up in the New York comedy scene in the early 2000s.
Like it's a docuseries?
Yeah, and it's like Blue Train. It's like Coltrane is playing in the background.
Starting in the alternative comedy scene led him to L.A. where he began in Caveman.
Hang on, my daughter's texting me. What a cunt.
I'm not saying she is. I'm saying
he would say that.
Yeah, I was doing the character that would say that.
Guys,
I wasn't saying
take
that.
It easy on Chris, okay? He's doing an act out.
I'm fine.
Jesus Christ.
Am I flinching?
That reminded me of that old BJ Novak joke, which was, I just met Yakov Smirnoff's wife. Ugh, what a cunt.
That was a funny joke.
It's so specific. The different pieces of information you would have to have.
Put it all together.
I love that. I love it.
The Franco roast. So, I felt similarly. Like, I remember going to the Charlie Sheen roast. I went and saw it. And I was like, ooh, this is a really negative vibe. This is like a real bad vibe to this whole thing. Like, it's like a NASCAR. It's like watching NASCAR.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, a truck pull or something.
People want to watch, like, crashes. And it was, you know, and at that moment, like, whatever you say about Sheen, he was fascinating in the country. But largely, roasts had become, like, people who are, like, were relevant and no longer were. And this was an opportunity for them to re-enter the public consciousness. And then very funny people decimating them.
And then without even really knowing them.
Yeah. And, like, look, Jeselnik and Amy and Whitney and, like, are super funny, great joke writers and performers. So it was fun to watch The Equation. But it was a different thing than what I think we all, quote unquote, remember from the Dean Martin roast, which was like, oh, these guys are all buddies and like, let's watch them be racist and homophobic.
Yeah.
But it still was, there was a camaraderie there that was kind of fun. And so when they said Franco, about the Franco roast, it was like, oh, that would be, if I were to ever do a roast, this would be the one. Just because it was, especially when they announced that Seth was going to be the MC, and that it was like, oh, well, Rogan's such a good guy, and the tone that he will set, I think, will be kind of fun. And so, you know, he was like, they'd reached out to be like, do you want to do it? And I was like, I think I do. Like, I think I wanted to do this one that would be kind of like, everyone felt relevant. I knew everyone except for James. He was the only guy I didn't know. And so Rogan, I was like, would you mind introducing us like over email and just so I can have some contact with him? So we emailed, Rogan put us in touch over email, and I emailed him and I was like, hey, do you want to get together for coffee? And he's like, I'm in Montreal, but if you want to call, like talk to me, we can talk on the phone. And I was like, okay. So he was like, this is my assistant's phone number. I was like, oh, okay.
All
right. Okay, fair enough. No, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. I'm not going to. Okay. So I call and we get on the phone, and then I'm all of a sudden like, wait, what am I going to talk to him about? Like, hey, you know, so I guess 3 days from now I'm going to do everything in my power to decimate you. What's going on? What are you doing in Montreal? So, and
what's your weaknesses?
Yeah. So he was.
Where's the tenderest meat?
Yeah. So he was like, he was very nice, but very quiet on the phone, which I think now. Well, so I'm talking to him for like a minute, and I'm like, "How's Montreal?" He's like, "It's good." I'm like, oh, "I love Montreal." So he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, yeah, it's a cool city. And he's like, okay, cool. And
so he's just waiting for you to get to the point, right?
I guess so. And so I'm like, so I don't know why I wanted to talk to you. And I was like, so, you know, did they approach you about it? Did you approach them? And he was like, they called me. He's like, I've never seen a roast. And he was like, pretty stupid of me to do this, huh? And I was like, no, it's in line with your adventurous spirit, which is true. Like, yeah, he is kind of like try anything kind of guy, which I really respect. But I wanted to be like, now looking back, I'm like, yeah, like Franco can do whatever he wants because he's fucking beautiful. Like, like the wildly handsome have a very different take on the world. Like, the world is working for them.
Yeah.
And for good reason. Like, he's a very handsome, very smart, very hardworking, very committed guy. But, you know, looking back, I'm like, yeah, he was like, oh, so I'm going to go to a roast and they're going to be like, oh, you're so good looking. Oh, what a drag. Oh, you do all the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, that's like when they roasted Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
And everyone seemed too afraid to really take shots. So a lot of it was like, hey, Frank's fucked like 10 girls this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't you, buddy? Didn't you,
what
buddy?
A dig.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder, tell me, so just, we can get back to the Franco phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Francophile, Montreal. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God,
it's all coming together.
So you look at someone like James Franco, and I think nonstop about comedy and what makes comedy work and why some comics work, why some other comics don't work. And I know he's not a comedian, but he is essentially in a position where he has to be funny.
Yeah,
and so I always think, you know, could a guy like Franco work with Louis's act?
Right.
I mean, obviously, some of the nuts and bolts would have to change, but part of what can make a comic, I think, is that they're not threatening to the audience in any way.
Right.
And when Franco walks out, he's immediately kind of threatening because people are like, well, fuck that guy. He doesn't have any problems. Right. I mean, obviously, he's a person, so
sure.
He does.
Sure.
But as a collective audience, people are immediately a little defensive because they think, like, oh, he has way more than I have.
Right, yeah. Right. I think, you know, and maybe that's why who knows? I mean, he's tried a bunch of stuff. Maybe that's why he doesn't necessarily do stand-up per se. But I think the key is, like, is that he's proven over and over that he has a sense of humor about himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At whatever it is, whether it's like, you know, being on General Hospital as a character named Franco, people are like, oh, what is he gonna do? And I was like, that's fucking cool. Like, yeah. That's like, he's not taking himself seriously at all. Like, the people who I'm like could never do comedy are like musicians who can't, like, well, that's not true because a bunch of musicians want to do comedy, I think. But like, people who take themselves, like, he's a fascinating one because, like, actors are so unironic that they, you know, if they got up to do stand-up, a lot of them would be like, here's what's really going on, you know? And you're like, it's like why Russell Crowe's, like, going to go do the Bill Hicks movie.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, Bill Hicks was saying what was going on, and he was earnest.
Yeah, it wasn't about comedy.
Yeah. And you're like,
actually, I think Jim Varney was earnest. I'm sorry. I was not worth stopping the momentum for that joke. It really was not worth it.
I don't know. My problem is I don't know who it is.
Ernest.
Oh.
Played by Jim Varney.
Well, I love that I just said the name louder and you're like,
Ernest. Yeah.
Ernest.
Oh, okay. Vern.
Yeah, I'm talking about Vern.
You know what I mean?
Again.
Wait, so Ernest's best friend was named Vern?
Yeah. Well, see, I tend to think that Vern was just a psychological extension of Ernest. He had a split personality.
Oh, gotcha.
Vernest.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he was talking to himself, like poking out of a shower, talking to himself.
Yeah, basically, I think that the real character, I think Vern is the real guy, and Ernest is this weird projection, this mental projection of like, hey, why can't you open up and be more fun? And Vern was always shutting windows on him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's true. And also the idea that Ernest is dead because he wears the same thing every time see him. That's what he was wearing when he died.
So maybe Vern, or that's the other way, is that Vern is real and Ernest is like the ghost.
Yeah. No, that's what we're saying. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah, yeah.
But
Ernest is either a ghost or a mental projection of Vern.
Guys, I'm getting scared stupid here.
We should go to camp.
Yeah. Ernest goes to purgatory.
Yep. Which he think
or he's in.
He might be.
Was he a comedian? Was that an act?
Yeah, I mean, he was an actor and and they were local commercials. They were like really regional commercials.
Your area?
In the Midwest, in the South.
Okay.
Really?
It was for. Well, it might have actually even been more.
And
local
was it
than
like
that.
7-Up or Sprite that were the big commercials he did?
No. He did like there was like a car commercial, I think. Like, you know, oh, there's some great deals down here at this Ford. And then it sort of blew up in the region, and then it kind of went national. And then he like that character was sort of like. You know, it was like Pee Wee Herman or any other character that sort of became bigger than the thing that they were doing. It just became this kind of cultural...
not stigma.
No, cultural staple. Like, just basically this, you know...
I remember it. I think my first, I feel like, was like a, like, hey, Vern! And it was like a, for like a 7-Up or something.
Yeah, it was actually pretty far before that, but it was the guy who was the annoying neighbor, and he would always like, you know, he'd prop a ladder up on his neighbor's window and be like, hey, Vern, you gonna go down? And then Vern would close the window on his hands.
Wow.
So.
Is he still alive?
No, Jim Varney died. He died of lung cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, he was an avid smoker. Yeah, yeah, real big fan of it.
Apparently.
Some guys like comic books.
Yeah.
This guy loved fucking cancer.
Yeah. No, he loved smoking, but cancer was like the trophy that he got from smoking so much.
That's so crazy. That's like Larry the Cable Guy, where it just became bigger than whoever that guy is.
Because he was a comic.
Whitney?
Dan?
It was a, Whitney? Dan, it was a character he was doing, and then it just kept...
He was just a regular stand-up.
Yeah.
And then it just... And I always wonder, because I don't see you do a lot of stand-up as you, Nick. I've seen you do some stand-up as Nick, but I've also seen you do Fabrice and other characters. And so I wonder, do you like that? Would you like a character to be bigger than you as a person? Do you like that? Do you think it's good to have the separation?
I used to do a lot more characters live. And I think, you know, obviously having my show has allowed me to do all those characters and feel fulfilled by them. But I also, at some point, did make a conscious decision that I wanted I wanted Nick Kroll to be like the guy who did all of these characters that I could like go to. But also, I found, especially going on the road, I didn't want to be relying on doing a character, because like although that was, I think, like the comedy world, I think, or fans of comedy have become so much more literate over the last like 6 years, even just from podcasts, honestly, like that you can go anywhere and be like, they'll be like, oh, that's that character that I heard on the podcast, versus like, all right, like you've just seen two comics and now a gentleman in a thong with four pairs of sunglasses is going to talk about Raven Simone. Yeah. You know, it's like,
you know what though? That sounds a lot like right before the comedy boom, late 70s, early 80s, when people would
turn around
and pack into comedy clubs, and then there were so many comedians, and some guys would just come out and do these crazy, ridiculous characters without really explaining it at all, and people were on board.
Yes, yeah. I think because there was enough comedy going around, and I think there's enough now. But I also just was like, I didn't ever want to be tied to one character. So it felt like, oh, if I am the center of them and then I can go and do all these different things. I do find like building characters that it's useful to perform them live because you can see where the laughs are.
Yeah.
But I think podcasts in a way have also kind of made that not irrelevant, but have been like, you know, I'll go and do like Comedy Bang Bang or something as a character, and then you can sort of see what people have responded to and be like, oh, that worked, or messing around with them live versus just going straight to filming.
Yeah,
you know?
Going back a little bit, was everyone okay after the roast, or were there any hurt feelings?
You know, there were, largely everyone was okay.
Franco didn't stick around. I remember he left right away.
Yeah. Well, I saw Jonah was on the red carpet doing all the interviews beforehand. So, right.
Which the both of you have done before.
Yes. I did it for the Joan Rivers roast.
I did it for Saget.
Yeah. And so it was a weird thing, because I was talking to you and I was like so nervous.
Yeah, you're kind of.
I am very glad that I was a part of that experience. But I did not have fun. I was incredibly nervous about performing, and I was somewhat nervous about what people were going to say about me or what people weren't going to say about me. Like, and I think I said this to you, but it was like this almost scarier than what people were going to say was to just be ignored,
right?
And because there is like a real, there's a real, especially with that roast where everybody was relevant, there was a real like fame ladder. of like who's really famous, who's and like in, and I didn't mind like Natasha made a joke of like Nick Kroll, you're one fan out there, and like which I was like great, you know what I mean? And like Franco called me a rat face, and I was like great, like the jokes didn't hurt my feelings at all. Like I didn't mind them, but almost scarier was like being like ignored and being like I'm not as famous or successful as these people. Like they're movie stars up here, and I'm like scrapping to be a part of it, which is true.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like, that was I think the scariest was like the reality of something like that. In the end, it was totally fine, but. Actually, going back to the character thing, was originally I was like, "Ooh, maybe I'll do a character because I'll feel more free to just really lay into people." Like, because I did one of the only roasts I ever did before that was like, I think Paul F. Tompkins did a roast at UCB, and I did Fabrice on that roast, and it was like it was at UCB. It was like Amy Mann and Jimmy Pardo and. Patton, and it was really fun because I just was Fabrice and I could be as vicious as I wanted to be and like have that rhythm, and you can hide behind a character, and like, and I was like, for this roast I was like, no, I don't think, I feel like that'll be cheating if I'm like everyone else would be make, not realizing like that I could be myself, go backstage, change. Become a character yeah. and come back, and like Hader building, yeah. yeah Hader did it and was obviously so funny, but Hader is not a stand-up at all. He's not a guy who is like Bill Hader on stage a ton, but was so funny and yeah. was able to do, and I was like, and like Andy Samberg did like a bit, you know, like yeah. a more of a bit, which I thought was really funny too. I mean, that to me was the fun thing about that roast is everybody did well. Like yeah. everybody killed. Everybody had their own take and their own style.
Yeah, even
to it.
Jonah's was like the bailing. It's like, why am I saying these things? You guys yeah. are my friend, and then saying something horrible. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're my friends.
Yeah, and like Natasha was super funny, and Sarah was yeah. super funny, and Ross, you know, Jeff Ross, who's like that's his bread and butter, like came up and showed why he is the fucking roast master. Yeah. Like he had great jokes. So it was. But just to finish the Franco thing, so the phone call, and he was like, I got to watch a roast. He's like, I haven't watched any. Do you have any to recommend? And I was like, oh my God, look, what the fuck am I doing? So I was like, you know, you could watch the old Dean Martin roast, which I think is the vibe they're going for with yours, or you could watch like the Pam Anderson roast if you want to see what the modern, like, monster version of this is.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, cool. And then get off the phone. And I saw Rogan the next day, and I was like, I spoke to Franco yesterday. I was like, it was the most awkward conversation I've ever. No, I saw him like the night of the roast. I was like, that was like the most awkward conversation I've ever had on the phone. Rogan's like, we've been friends for 10 years. I don't think I've ever spoken to him on the phone. So whereas it felt to me like a power play, I think he's just not a guy you talk on the phone to.
Yeah.
And then we did it, and it was like, I went home and like was like, that was terrible. Like I felt terrible about myself that night. And my friends were like, my friend was like, I think you have like just body dysmorphia here. Like that, yeah. You were great. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched, I was like, oh, that was fine.
Yeah.
But it just was this weird, I can't explain it. It's like, it's such a weird negative, not a negative vibe because we all are like friendly and respect each other, you know?
But you're exposed in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable in the sense that people could say stuff that you're really actually insecure about.
Sure.
But you should be okay with it because you're up there and it's all just mm-hmm. the name of the game.
Yeah.
You're also exposed in the sense that if you're not funny, everyone's going to be like, that guy's not fucking funny. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
then it's going to be the thing that everyone talks about yeah. the next day. It's like, yeah. oh, old Kroll bombed yeah. on the old road.
The next you know? Situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, and on top of that, because it was Franco and because it was all of those folks up there, it felt like this was one that people were going to watch. Like that, like our world of people who you would want to watch and respect you are going to watch this one. They're going to like tune in, like you watch this yeah. one, like, or, you know, like you wouldn't necessarily, I don't know if you watched like whatever the one was last year. I don't even remember who it was, but like there was something about like our community was going to watch it and I didn't want to fuck up yeah. for our community. And like, you know, a couple weeks later I was somewhere and I'm going to name drop here. Like I met P.T. Anderson and Adam Sandler who had both watched the roast and were like, hey, good job, man. And I was like,
cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was fun. I was comfortable the whole time.
Because you don't want to hear, hey, I saw the roast. Look, man, those things are hard.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Or just like, hey, I saw the roast. So what are you up to now?
Yeah. Because I keep thinking about, that was the first one I watched where I go, maybe I would do one of these, although I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But now that I'm in a position where it's likely that Comedy Central might ask me to do
one
at some point, I still can't. You know, that you do that thing when you're a performer, when you're watching other people, and you're like, would I have said that?
Yes.
Would I have a different joke? What would I do if, like, you can't help but put yourself in this situation? And I honestly,
you'd be good at it.
I don't think I don't know if I would.
Your mean jokes are good.
No, I don't like being mean.
It's a weird thing. It's a really weird thing, because you are like, we all are mean, or we can be mean, but also, like, I think in general, honestly, like, comedians, for, at least from my experience, our community is actually a very largely supportive, decent, nice group of people. Like, the whole, like, idea of, like, mean, like, truly mean stuff, like, I guess we're all capable of it. We're all monsters inside. but I do think, like, inherently, it's not our community to do that, really, towards, I don't know. Like, I don't like talking about other comedians. I will never publicly, like talk badly about other comedians.
Like, for instance, who would you not talk about? I'm kidding.
Like, I don't know. Like, a Jonah Ray type.
Right,
example.
Right, right.
I fucking knew it.
I kind of feel like that I would have two approaches from the receiving end if I were just on a dais and I knew that shit was coming. That I would either have to try to make as comprehensive a list of as possible of, like, here's all the things that they're probably going to go after, and just go, okay.
Yeah.
Or I would have to go in and say, I'm just going to have to let all of it go, and whatever it is, you know, this is just what they do, and then just not take it that, you just can't. Yeah.
You try to prep for it, and, like, it was fun and interesting going out like that. It was, the funnest part of it was going out that week before, and, like, Aziz and Natasha and Jeff and Sarah, we were all running sets around town, and, like, you know, Aziz and I were like, you know, we've been doing stand-up together, comedy together for, like, 10 years, so, like, it was fun to be out with him and be like, and also being like, I heard that so-and-so's gonna do a joke about your, you know, like, and so... And like Aziz does, he's methodically effective and efficient at being like, oh, they're going to make fun of the fact that, like, I said I was friends with Kanye. Well, I'll go write a joke in anticipation of that. And he was very effective at that. And, you know, but you are anticipating what's going to come and to be like, all right, am I going to have a joke ready for that or not? It's a super weird process.
Or just all of a sudden just feel an arrow go thump, like, oh, I didn't know that note was exposed. Yeah. I thought I was all covered up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah. Oh,
how? Well, Sarah talked afterwards about how she was bummed that people talked about her age. And, you know, and it was like, God, I didn't even think that would be something, like, she's got such a good sense of humor about herself, but you don't know, you know what I mean? I don't think she knew that would hurt her.
That's a good point.
Which,
yeah,
you know, I think that to me just says that they don't know her, and that's not something that's anything about who she is.
Right.
That's just a thing that's like, oh, what are the most surface things we can talk about?
Right, and that's the thing, is, like, certain jokes just became the jokes that it was like, you know.
Gay jokes.
Yeah, or like Franco's gay, or Sarah's older, or Natasha's not famous, or Nick looks like a rat face. it was interesting because it was like I had a joke that got cut about Sarah being older, but it was like, well, it's a joke about her. She's not old. She's like a beautiful, super, like, hip, like, youthful person. It's just that I've known about her for many years because she was on Saturday Night Live, like, 18-19 years ago, however long ago. Like, you know, like, I've just... But she's not in any way. Like, I don't think of her as old at all.
No. Right.
Which is one of the reasons you would make that joke. But like, you know, we all have our sensitivities. You know what I mean? That are... have good basis or no basis.
Yeah. I think I almost wonder if it would be a good exercise or a bad, like, I hope for Sarah's sake that afterwards she's not like, I never thought about that before, and now is obsessed about that thing. If I were ever to do it, I would sort of say, like, you know, whatever shots I take, hopefully when I come out of it, I'll be like, hey, I survived that, and it wasn't such a big deal, so yeah. maybe I don't need to be as insecure about all this dumb shit anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like I was talking to someone about it the other day, of like, if you said the things that you say to yourself about other people, you'd be like, you're a fucking monster.
Yeah. Oh my God. I started laughing because that's funny, and at the same time, that's a very poignant thing that you just said, because I think particularly, I mean, most people are shitty to themselves.
Yeah.
But particularly people who do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very symbiotic relationship between this profession attracts people who are predisposed to be a little emotionally broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then the structure of the thing itself makes that worse.
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't help it.
But it's also, I also think to become successful, you have to be highly self-critical, because you have to be improving yourself. So you're going to be like, nah, that wasn't good. Like, I didn't fucking nail that. Like, that set wasn't great. Like, versus like guys like, hey, fucking got some laughs there. All right. Like,
three laughs.
Yeah, that guy's plateauing.
He is, but the fucking got some laughs guy is probably not going home sad.
Right.
You know, which is totally fine, but
he's getting laid. He's getting spots occasionally, but he ain't getting a TV show.
He's not getting a TV show. That's fine. No, you're right. I definitely think there is a difference between self-criticism and flagellation.
Yes.
Because, you know, I say this to people. Something had, you know, just in responding with people online about this podcast or anything that I work on or anything that we work on. And, you know, what happens a lot of times is someone will say something really shitty, like in a really mean way, and I'll go, hey, you know, you didn't have to say that way. I go, you can't take criticism. Like, no.
Yeah.
If you have constructive criticism, when people actually say, hey, look, I don't mean this as an attack, but just for me as someone who listens to your stuff, I think maybe you could work on doing this or try this or this is my impression of this. And I always go, oh my God, that is very insightful and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Now go fuck yourself.
And they'll go, I thought you didn't like criticism. I'm like, no, criticism is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But beating someone in the face I think in some people's minds, they think, oh, that's criticism. No, that's just being shitty.
Right.
And that's what we do to ourselves.
Right.
And so that's why I think you have to be careful between being self-critical and just like, you're so fucking stupid. Why did you think you could, as opposed to, that didn't go as well. How can you make this better?
Right. But I think it's a constant marriage of the two. But in a way, like, we have like some of our worst internet commenters in our own head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know
absolutely.
What I mean? It's like, because like you can show a picture, like, you know, you're like, oh my God, you look great in that picture. You're like, I look like a fucking idiot. You know what I mean? Look at my fucking double chin and I'm a piece of fat fucking shit, you know? And then they're like, no, you look great. And then like, you're like, I love this picture of you. And you're like, that person's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that one. Look at that.
I'm a nightmare. I'm a human nightmare.
I think we all have to, I think it would be better if we allowed ourselves the ability to recognize that there is a disparity between what we see because we are with ourselves every second of the day and what other people see. Other people's brains cannot process everything we are at once.
Yeah.
So they're not going to see every detail that you're like, oh, this is weird, or my ears are this, or my chin is that, or I can't. People aren't taking that all in. They just look at you really quick and go, oh, that's Nick. Hey, there's Jonah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes will look, if I see a picture of a paparazzi picture of a celebrity that's, you know, generally really good looking, and I'll look at it for a little bit and go, I wonder if they think that their face looks wide.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah, they do.
I wonder if they're like weirded out about this part of their neck.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. They all have their things.
Oof, everybody does. It's wild. It's really wild. So to just, as we continue to talk, because I think it's interesting stuff, but the end of the Franco thing is like, and then about the middle of the roast near the end, I was like, how are you holding up to him in like a commercial break? Because like they would break for commercial, we'd all like, I was taking shots with Rogan. Like, I was like, I'm getting drunk and this is crazy. But I went up to James. I was like, how's it going? He's like, oh, this is great. He's like, I never watched a roast, so I didn't know that you guys, everyone made fun of each other. I thought you guys were just going to make fun of me for 2 hours.
Oh.
So he was like, I think I'm getting off easy.
As you guys who all knew each other were attacking each other.
Yeah,
like,
He's just
above
the fray.
James Franco's too pretty for words.
Yeah. that was like also an interesting lesson of like, oh, it is also about expectation of like, what if you're expecting the worst, then if it, you know, everybody tears each other apart and leaves you slightly alone, you're like, oh, that was great.
Did you think about how you were going to react when people made fun of you? Because Aziz went with the slapping.
Hand slapping. The hand which slapping. Is what he does. But yes, it was interesting to like, you are aware. I mean, that was the other thing. And I think it's, we've all been in those situations. Like, you have to do something for the first time. You have to do everything for the first time once. So, like, for me, part of what was disconcerting about it was, like, reading a teleprompter and being like, am I looking at the camera? Is the teleprompter the camera right now? Or am I pretending to look at the audience? And like, they're, I can see on the corner of the monitor now that they're cutting to me for a reaction. Yeah. Am I reacting? You know, there are all those, there's so many things that you're trying to process at once that it's like, and versus, like, you know, like, Seth or Jonah, who have like done the Golden Globes or the Oscars and are used to being in a theater of people reading a teleprompter, you know, like, yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know how this fucking works. I don't know how to do this really. But I tried to react as genuinely as possible and just laugh.
It's so funny to hear you describe it because it sounds like what it's like to shoot a porn or a sex scene.
Yeah.
When you're an audience member, oh, hey, they're probably having fun there. But at the time, yeah, move this over here. This has got to be this. It's like hearing all the mechanics of it to basically create what you know, what is this seamless comedy experience.
Yeah, I've shot not a ton of like make out or like sexy stuff.
Yeah.
And I like, that's what I like to call it.
Sexy stuff.
Does Script have any sexy stuff?
I've probably gotten like 1.5 hard-ons shooting like make out
scenes.
Now,
is that a hard-on and a half of one, or if you added up like the little
like
percentages of hard-ons?
How many chubs does make a hard-on?
I've gotten like, let's say one full hard-on and then like 2 or 3 half chubs.
Was the other person aware that there was a...
Generally, no. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you're not, like, it's so, maybe once or twice. I mean, there's that famous, like, quote of, like, they're about to do a sex scene. I can't remember who it's attributed to, like, Brando or something like that. And he's like, I'm sorry for what's about to happen or for what is not about to happen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's generally frowned upon to look at an actress and go, you're supposed to get wet. Like, you're not supposed to do that.
You're not?
I was talking to a girl.
Especially
once.
If you're a host and you don't act in things.
I was talking to a girl once. It was about, she was like a day player on some show and she was going to have to make out with the lead guy. And the guy comes into her dressing room. He's like, hey, peppermint or cinnamon? She's like, excuse me? Peppermint or cinnamon? What do you want me to taste like?
I'm so conscious of trying not to make the woman feel awkward or like, I'm so conscious of like, let's make this comfortable and fun and like that the last thing on my mind generally is like, oh, we're about to fucking do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Want it to look real.
I just, Tootsie, you know that thing? And it's like, are you ready, my dear?
God damn it. That movie holds up.
Yeah.
110. But Bill Murray?
So good. Improvised all his lines.
I know. We just did a live reading of that, and it was... It's so good. It was. I rewatched it, and it's great, and it really holds up too on the page.
Where did you do a reading of that?
At LACMA, Jason Reitman generally does them. He does a bunch of live readings of classic movies, and then David Wayne did this one. Like Reitman's away, so Wayne did one, and I think Patton did one. Wayne's favorite movie is Tootsie, and so he did a live reading of it, and I got to do Dustin Hoffman. I got to read that part. Wow. And it was one of the most fun things that I've ever done.
I miss Dorothy. She's
right here.
It's so crazy. And I heard making that movie that they hated each other. Sidney Pollack and Dustin Hoffman were like clashing constantly.
Really?
And it was just such an interesting example because in my mind it's like, oh, the best art comes out of when everybody's like collaborating and loving each other and it's like, no, that movie was a nightmare for them to make.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know, if, you know, someone, you guys can Google it at home. Don't press pause. Listen to the whole thing and then go back.
But, make a note. Make a mental
make
note.
Make a note to go Google Sidney Pollack, Dustin Hoffman, beef? ?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone made a Dustin Hoffman, Sidney Poitier.
I like that.
Never mind. I've already fucked it up.
No.
But what was it going to be?
Yeah, it was going to be a food
like
joke.
A piece
beef.
Of meat?
Yeah, like yeah, a piece yeah, of yeah. meat, a sandwich at a Tootsie-themed cafe somewhere. Just a very specific information.
This is a bit that was pitched a long time ago. I think it was a Mulaney idea.
we pitched a bunch of sketches to Chappelle's show, like, you know, when they would take submissions, and the sketch was called Poitier's Complaint. And it was just like, but it was like really petty complaints from Poitier, just like, yes, listen to me, man. This dry cleaning is not starched enough, man. Shockingly, they didn't buy it.
With the gravity of his
yes,
voice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it didn't work.
I like the toast crusty on the outside, man.
You listen to me, mama. These waters are too tiny.
This change machine took my dollar.
Still alive, Sydney.
He is.
Yeah.
Good.
Director of Ghost Dad.
Really?
Bill Cosby.
Are you really? Serious?
Yeah.
Good for him.
You ghost listen dad. To me, Ghost Dad.
Now you're Ghost Dad, see?
I can see right through you.
These are not peanut M&Ms, mama.
That almost sounds like Bono and Bullet the Blue Sky. The God I believe in isn't short of cash, mister.
Who are you angry at? Who are you talking?
Is this Bono or?
Bono.
The singer?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you
or
too.
Or Bono, the singer.
Was he in a movie Bono. Or is this a song?
It's a song called Bullet the Blue Sky from on Rattle and Hum.
Ah.
And it's just, he's having this, you know, he was sort of it was the period of his music where it was like, he was really kind of like critical of capitalism.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was just this, you know, God, I believe it isn't short of cash. But he was talking about televangelists, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's kind of cool. Like, at the end of it all, like, he's, like, there's something you're like, oh, you're against capitalism? With your like, crazy...
I don't mind Bono at all. And although I loved the South Park episode with Bono, well,
I haven't seen that one.
I don't want to spoil it, but yeah. You should watch it.
Of course.
And they basically essentially just said the worst thing that you one of the worst ways that you can depict a person,
uh-huh.
And it was still hilarious. But I was still like, what's everyone's Bono? Like he's what's wrong with
he's
Bono?
He's doing his thing.
Of all of those kinds of people. He has like done. He has made a real impact on the world, and I think in a real way with like the work in Africa. Like in a real way, you're like, oh, you're not just like,
yeah, he's not just talk.
Yeah, like save the like I like yeah like it's like dogs need saving, you know. And you're like,
so
it's
I
true.
Put on this ribbon.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
we're raising money for these dogs, and you're like, what about like the thousands and millions of homeless people in this country? Like, they're not
cuddly.
Yeah,
yeah. Can't adopt one of those.
Yeah. So,
Kroll Show is back in a couple days.
January 14th. It's every Tuesday at 10:30. So I don't know when this airs.
This is going up tomorrow.
Great.
So it's in advance of.
Oh, the great, premiere. Great. Yeah. So yeah, it's
drum up some excitement.
Yeah. So it's every Tuesday at 10:30. And it's I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited for.
Is this season three?
Season two.
You guys started writing this a year ago?
It started airing a year ago, like similar, like January 19th or something, and we were writing season two when it premiered.
That's right.
And then we started shooting and finished shooting in like June, and we've been done, wrapped, in like October.
So this will be like watching someone else's show at this point.
Yeah. It is. It's kind of fun. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever had that where you like, you know, I guess like Midnight is like, it's, you shoot it and it's back and it's that
night. I get that with cartoons. I do voices and you don't see the cartoon for like a 9 months or a year. You're like, oh, I totally forgot.
Yeah, and that's how it feels. Like, it's kind of crazy because I put the show away. You know, you watch each episode like 100 times as you're editing it and tightening it up and stuff like that, and then you put it away, and now I'm like rewatching stuff as I'm like, you know, getting ready to talk about the show and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh god, I forgot all about all it's really fun.
That's
you
cool.
Can sort of begin to enjoy it, and it's sort of like we were talking about, of like, you look at yourself like, I need to watch my, when I edit my stuff, like I need to watch it at least two times to before I can give any notes, because the first time all I'm doing is being like, look at your fat fucking face.
Oh,
cut
no.
this out. I look fat.
Yeah. And I try not to cut anything where I'm like, I don't look good. But like the first time I watch something, I'm just watching myself. I'm not watching.
Funny is that you give yourself a pass to be like, all right, here's where I'm going to not be focusing on anything relevant.
Right.
Yeah. But I at least just have to get this out of my system.
I get one out of my system, and then I can watch and be like, cut this, cut that. Cut everybody else's lines. Leave my jokes. Nobody else can score.
Push the image in.
But then also cut my face out of it because I don't like it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
Nick,
yeah.
There's no one left in the show.
I know. That's just fine. Air the black.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's perfect.
AV
now
Club's
perfect.
Going crazy yeah. for this one.
No, I think I'm actually. I think I'm actually. Being I'm harder on myself on jokes of my own than I am on other people sometimes, where I'll be like cut my joke, you know what I mean? And like because it's, you know, every bit is like me and John Daly, me and Jenny Slate, me and John Mulaney, me and Chelsea Peretti, me and, you know, I generally have another, like, a partner, me and Jason Manzoukas, and then there are other pieces, but like in general it's been like me partnering up with one of my good friends. And I'm usually like, cut my joke here. Like, Mulaney's joke's better. Or like, you know, I like Daly's take on this or whatever, you know,
that's for the better of the sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think I'm okay at being like, my joke's not as good here, you know, or
is there someone there to say like, no, your joke is better.
Yeah. And then it's all ends up being all my jokes. No. I luckily have like, you know, Jonathan Kreisel, who directed the show, and then John Levenstein, who's the showrunner, and then our editors are Dan Longino and Bill Benz, and I have very much like tried to have a conversation with them about it. Like, very rare. Yeah. There's been one or two times where I'm like, no, I want this. Like, this is where I'm putting my foot down, and I want this. And I know you don't agree with me, but it's my name, so I'm gonna.
Yeah. As long as you don't do it all the time.
No, I do it very, very sparingly. Because for the most part, it's like, no, you've hired these people to be your partners, like, or, you know, there's a reason for that. Like, and if you can release that element of it, then your job and life becomes so much easier that it's not all on you to make every decision, good and bad.
Oh, I agree. And I also feel like, yeah, there's a, you know, a lot of people are funnier than I am. and I'm totally fine with that. And I just only, you know, as long as the best overall thing gets made,
yeah.
I kind of don't care who says,
yeah,
who has the thing, as long as the thing gets
whatever
out there.
Whatever services the bit or the comedy of the moment or the bit.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's what I'm very proud of with the show, is I think like the shows as a whole are like the best version of the show, I think the whole process is very collaborative, and I can't imagine doing like that. Some of that is out of insecurity, being like, no, I'm not funny enough on my own. Like, I need like Daly and Mulaney and Chelsea and Jenny Slate and Levenstein and Kreisel and the editors and all the writers that we have. Like, I can't imagine, like, I'm too insecure with my own product to put that out. You know what I mean? Like, and also, like, I need to be a human being. I need other people to have responsibility and ownership over this so that it gets done, because I can't imagine being the only person who's like, no, this, we need to get, you know what I mean? Like, that seems like a nightmare to me, to be like a sole voice.
This didn't work. Well, you said.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
No,
yeah.
You forced your thing.
Yeah,
I did.
No way. Yeah,
I did do that. Yeah,
oh, that's right. I said it wasn't. Yeah, you had to use my.
Yeah.
Still, you let me.
Yeah.
What?
It's still your fault.
So you're
somehow, right? Right?
Yeah.
So it's that. To me, it's the collaboration that makes it like a real fun, also a really fun thing to do. Like,
yeah.
Where you're like, you know, we were shooting this teaser episode that's online. All the episodes, by the way, are online. If you haven't seen season one, it's all on ComedyCentral.com and Hulu. But there's a teaser episode that we made, like sort of bridging season one and season two. And it was like, and I had a bunch of the folks. One of the differences between season one and season two is like, we have a bunch of interviews, sort of on the fly interviews with whoever the guest stars were, because we were talking about it with your show as well, that Comedy Central wants to like to see the behind the scenes, and like same with Midnight, where it's like they want to see all of us like playing around with each other, and it makes sense, because it's like some of the fun stuff is the off the cuff like mess around stuff. And so I had like Chelsea, Jenny, Slate, Daly, and Mandzukas all there, and we were all just sort of like yapping away as like interstitial stuff, and I was like, God, this is so fucking cool that it's like me with my friends, like truly my friends who I think are so funny, and then we're all gonna get in here and like talk about the show we made and talk about the show that's coming. It's like it's just so it's so crazy that we get to do it, and it's so fun. It was a real moment of like, oh, this is done, and now we're hopefully we'll make more. But you know, like a brief starting to like look back on it, be like, God, we're so lucky that we get to that this is happening.
Yeah, it's long way from Oh Hello.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, and yet the same thing, you know. Yeah.
And also, I have to hugely apologize to you because you gave us a video for At Midnight, and we couldn't air it.
Oh, you couldn't?
We couldn't air it because we in the first run of the show. We were like, oh, one way that will really be able to get our friends on who can't actually be there for whatever reason is we'll just get them to do something on their iPhone on their iChat camera. So we shot a bunch of them, and we started showing them, and we realized, like, I guess we were thinking the way the internet works. Like, oh, you could just put this on YouTube, and it would make sense. But what we were finding is we would show these, like, iChat or iPhone videos, and because people weren't mic'd properly, the live audience could never hear what they were saying. And so we have this one screen that's just to the left of the podium that was just for like, oh, these are celebrity cameo videos. Yeah. And we had to stop. The only other one we did is we actually sent a camera crew to Nick Offerman because we're like, we have to mic these people from now
that's
on.
So interesting.
So that takes some of the charm out of it then, right?
Well, a little bit. But I mean, in theory, you think it might. But in actuality, like the iChat kind of iPhone cameras, they really just don't look as like the rest of the television show is produced. And that part and the audio is like you're back here and you can't. So it was a huge bummer. So I'm sorry you wasted your time doing that, but I really, really, really want you to come do.
I would like to.
Come be on the show or come.
Yeah, I would like to. And it's very exciting to watch.
You'll crush. You'll fucking destroy.
Yeah, it is fun. It's fun to watch something like that sort of take hold and work. And again, I go back to like, you got to do something for the first time. It's like there are the things like that that you just don't know in season one.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this thing that we like love the idea of in practice just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I felt that with Kroll Show with season one to season two. You're just like, oh, like we were trying to do like, it's going to be super dense. And it's the show's still very dense, but it was like, we'll do one-off sketches, then we'll do these longer pieces and we'll do da-da-da-da. And like we watched it. You know, starting to air, and you're like, oh, like that doesn't work right. And now, like, and you get to go do season two, and you're like, oh, now, you know, like, let's have more, like, less of these faster sketches and take that time and, like, have me talk to, like, you know, Craig Robinson or Chelsea or Zach or whoever the guest, you know, the guest star was. And those moments sort of took that place, and I think makes the show more of a fun hole to watch, but you just don't know. It's like you guys are going to do your show. You just don't know.
That's one of my favorite things, though. As long as you're given the opportunity to apply the knowledge that you've gained,
yes.
But I love it, it's for me. It's the equivalent of taking apart a toaster and figuring out how it works.
Yeah,
you know, it's okay, great. Well, it sucked that we had to lose that thing, but amazing that we now. Because I'm sure you've like kind of like what you were saying. There's probably stuff that came up that you never ever would have had any idea. Like, oh, that's the thing that's going to work. Oh my God! And then you can focus on that.
Yeah, and then you over focus on it, and then people don't like it anymore.
It's too thinky.
Yeah, it's like sticking a fork in a toaster. Yeah. Get electric. But I do think, for me, it's a process of elimination, and it's like for me, it's like putting the puzzle together. That's the fun part of, especially in the edit, which I was always like scared of. Was always like, well, the edit is where I lose power because like I can control the writing, I control what I say on set, but once we get into editing, like I'm just there. You know what I mean? Yeah. But then now I'm like, no, the edit is another piece of that puzzle where you can just keep working it.
Yeah. So that's 10. It's running for 10 weeks. Starting on the 14th. And then are you on the...
11 weeks, actually.
11 weeks.
Yeah.
Are you performing anywhere anytime soon?
I was doing the road in November, December. I'm going to be in New York, actually, while the show comes out, making a movie that I have been put together for like a couple years ago. It's been a long process, but that is me and Rose Byrne and Bobby Cannavale.
Wow,
nice. And it's sort of like a dramedy that I've been sort of putting.
Nice.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, so I'm really, that's what I'll be doing while
the show comes out, and then we'll come back. I'll come back from there and start writing Kroll Show season 3.
Hey. Holy shit!
So hopefully we'll get it's script order. We haven't been picked up officially, but so we'll start writing it and see what happens.
That's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it's good to see you, Nick.
It's good to thank you for having me. I always enjoy being here.
Please come back whenever you want.
This
please
sounds
come,
like a fake conversation.
Please come do the At Midnight program.
Yeah, I would love to.
No one's ever said like as many times as people have said we started. No one's been like, "Have we finished?
Are we finished?
Are we done?
Is this done?
Are we finished now?
Can I be myself now?
Can we be?
Ugh, can you believe I was saying all that shit about being insecure? What a fucking joke!
Sounded like a real pussy there, Nick.
Yeah. Like, and I said I wanted to make women feel comfortable in sex scenes. I'm a monster.
Yeah. I just binocled my dick.
Oh, hey, yeah.
It stings.
Yeah. No, it really hurts. Why did I do that? Why did I do that?
Cinnamon.
Dick flavored? Dick flavored?
Yeah, I don't know why they sold it either. Anyway, which one?
Yeah.
You just remind me that I just saw an ad from the producers of Jersey Shore have essentially done Jersey Shore in the South with rednecks.
Yeah.
And it's, look, I get it. I don't want to begrudge people working, and I'm sure if someone, someone went to them and was like, can you please do a redneck version of this? Mm-hmm. And they were like, sure, we did that well, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cookie cutterness of it is so like, the situation is called Daddy, and he's fucking shirtless and ripped, but he has a crazy nickname, and it just like, come on.
Yeah, it's kind of
try to branch out.
It's done until we watch
try
it.
Try to branch out. Oh my God, did you see the party down south?
Yeah.
So fucking amazing.
Have you read Daddy's book? It's really, really funny. It seems like it'd be dumb, but it's really
ironically,
good.
It's about moms.
Yeah.
All right.
All righty.
Get out.
All right, thank you.
Get out!
Guys,
these headphones.
Man,
buddy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully, no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.